The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. Tony, the Sweet 16 begins in an hour. Do you remember your Sweet 16th?
I'm Tony Kornheiser. I'll never forget it. I went to a ball game. Mordecai Three Finger Brown was on the hill. Remember him? A little before your time.
No, he wasn't Three Finger on the Brown. Hill. Sweet 16. Yeah. I had a Sweet 16 party. You know, didn't want my parents coming to the basement, lights dimmed. You know?
Yeah.
Didn't want them coming downstairs. They didn't listen to me. They came downstairs. I think Don was my
DJ. If I was your father, I would have come down there with a fire hose. And no, I would have got rid of everybody.
There was no need for one, believe me.
Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. In today's episode, questions about NBA officiating, baseball managers move to the outfield shift, and Jay Billis joins us for 5 good minutes. But we begin today with tonight's 4 scheduled Sweet 16 games. There's a 3 seed Kansas State against a 7 seed Michigan State. There's 4 UConn against 8 Arkansas. There's 4 Tennessee against 9 Florida Atlantic. And there's 2 UCLA against 3 Gonzaga. Wilbon, which game most intrigues you?
I'm not missing a possession of any of this. So they all do on some level, Tony, especially now that we've gotten to a second weekend, a third weekend, if you watch conference tournaments and you have an identification of players and, oh, I like watching this kid. I want to see what he can do in this situation. But having said that, it's UCLA Gonzaga. There's no question. I mean, Yaquez is a player that you want to see for UCLA. When I first heard people, analysts who should know, comparing him to UCLA greats, I wanted to go old man and say, what are you talking about? This kid can't be Marcus Johnson. This kid is not with Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe. And then you watch him and you say, let me pipe down a little bit. And then I like watching Drew Timmy. Because Drew Timmy has got, I keep hearing what he can't do. All I see is what he can do, dropping left-hand hook shots over his right shoulder and just being this sort of Tim Duncan, Kevin McHale hybrid dude who may not be good enough to play in the pros. I like watching him specifically, and I picked Gonzaga to win the whole thing. So Gonzaga, UCLA, Tone, if I could only watch one game, that would be the game, but I'm going to watch all of them.
I'm not going to argue with any of that because you're 100% right. In terms of history, in recent history, and far away history, these two schools are incredibly important. I find myself wondering why that's a Sweet 16 game and not an Elite Eight game or maybe even a Final Four game. But I'll move on. I'm like you. I will watch as much as I can. I give Florida Atlantic a real chance over Tennessee.
Me too.
They've won 33 games this year. And Tennessee's going to have difficulty preparing for a team that they've never seen and they know nobody in the conference. And not only that, Tennessee had a signature win against Duke. I don't know if you can get up for Florida Atlantic after you've played Duke. And Florida Atlantic's 33-3, which is tied for the best record in the country. Kansas State is a team I like to win the whole thing. Kansas State and Texas. But you know what? Something happens to Michigan State that causes you to fear them in March. Tom Izzo
get better.
Pulls a switch or
better.
Something.
They do.
And they get better. So, again, that will not surprise me. Tom Izzo in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight is 18-6 in his career. And the last game that I'll talk about, and let me consult my notes here. And I know the Big East has been great. They lost their best team, Marquette, but they got 3 in. And UConn looks really good. But, Mike, if you saw Arkansas against Kansas, you're not going to be surprised if they're able to take out UConn, right?
There's no surprise result tonight. So I don't want to see any stupid headlines on any channel that say upset alert and this is a no, stop. Put the seeds away, put your phones down and watch the game. Try doing that, youngsters. Watch the game. Let's move to officiating in the NBA. Mark Cuban says the Mavs planned to protest last night's loss to the Dubs after confusion as to which team had possession led to an uncontested Kevon Looney dunk in the third quarter of a game the Dubs won by 2. And after losing to the Lakers, some of us might say getting hosed, Suns coach Monty Williams expressed dismay about the 46-20 free throw disparity in the Lakers' favor with Devin Booker, my man, adding, quote, I understand the agendas that are being pushed, close quote, ouch. Who has a stronger complaint, Tone? Mavs, Suns.
The Mavericks have no complaint. They have no complaint. The ball was clearly off one of their players and immediately called it was off one of their players. If they decide that somehow that has changed and they go to half court and expect the ball there, that's a failure of coaching. If I'm a referee and I'm ready to go and one team is ready to go and the other team isn't ready to go, I may hand them the ball. Now, could I stop and could I call Dallas over and say, you know, come on back here? I could have done that. But maybe the referees are sick of Mark Cuban's hysterics. Here's Cuban. This is a great quote. He called this the worst officiating non-call mistake possibly in the history of the NBA. Sit down, Sparky. Nobody wants to hear this. Phoenix has a greater complaint because the disparity is 20 foul shots to 46. And maybe that deserves scrutiny. But I'm going to tell you what deserves scrutiny. Your boy, Devin Booker, saying he understands the agendas are being pushed. Whoa. Devin Booker has just suggested that the league is fixing games so that the Lakers can get into the playoffs. He's your boy. Defend your
boy. I'm going to defend him. And I'm glad you skipped right to that. The Mavericks thing was a fluke. I saw that. I went, whoa. It's a fluke. Tony, I sat through a really dark night episode with the Los Angeles Lakers having a free throw disparity like this in a playoff game in Sacramento. It ought to be the most embarrassing chapter in the NBA's modern history. I was there. I don't have to look at a 30 for 30. I covered it. I wrote it the next day and forcing a phone call from David Stern to say, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about it because agenda, and this is the word Book used, and Devin Booker is measured. He's not out there popping off. Okay, like people from another team, Memphis. He's not doing that. He's measured. The word agenda suggests intention and manipulation. Now, I don't know that there was that, but I know the sentiment. I saw the Lakers rewarded a game. I saw a game in 2002 in the playoffs stolen. I saw the Sacramento Kings cheated out of a playoff win and a series win. Saw it. So I understand the history here. And there are people, Tony, the NBA conspiracy theories float around the NBA like no other league because there is a belief, pop culture belief in this stuff. And there are dear friends like, oh, wait, let me do it again. You and Stephen A., who root for these pillars, Celtics, Lakers, Lakers at all costs, Celtics at all costs, big market teams, glamour teams. Phoenix is not that, even though it's the fourth or fifth biggest city in America. Booker knows that. He knows what they're up against. I applaud him for using it. He's going to get fined. I'm not going to volunteer to pay any of it, but I know what it is. And for people to act like it didn't exist, Tony, it's a fair sentiment to express, and it's the league's fault. I saw it in Sacramento. I saw it. I was there.
I'm fine with what you're saying, but if there were a living, breathing commissioner of the NBA, he'd call Devin Booker in.
Yeah,
and he'd call in Luka Doncic for doing this, as if the referees were bought and paid for.
Yeah.
If there was a living, breathing commissioner, which there might not be, let's move to baseball. One of the rule changes everyone seems to like is outlawing the infield shift, which resulted in infielders playing in the outfield to create nearly impossible paths to hitting safely on one side of the field. But the outfield shift is still legal. And as Jason Stark writes in The Athletic, a few teams have taken their left fielder out of left and put him in short right. Wilbon, should baseball be concerned with the outfield shift?
Not yet, Tony. I guess you could get concerned if, you know, you look at the results, and that's all they do in baseball now is look at the results. They'll compile every possible number to figure out whether it's being distorted, and they'll go back to it. And Theo will do a great job of that with assistance, no doubt. But you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see it organically defeated. This reminds me of like when you pull sides together in my park in West Chatham on a Saturday morning, you only got 14 kids, you got 7 each, and you have to say, well, right field's closed, and you can't hit the right field. That's an automatic out.
Right.
What are we talking about here? Major League Baseball players can hit a baseball, even the ones that are throwing 100 miles per hour, almost wherever they want, whenever they want, at least in that direction. Make them pay. That's why I don't really like the shift outlaw anyway, because you can make people pay by going the other way. You don't have to pull. You don't have to hit it over people. You can make them pay. So I wouldn't be concerned about it, but I'm not running baseball.
Yeah, I mean, people have to understand this. Baseball is a game of one person against nine. It is stacked for the defense all the time. So the great hitters learn how to place the ball where the fielders are not. For reasons that I don't really understand, left-handed power hitters insist on trying to jack it out rather than going opposite field against a shift like this where they will get at least a double and usually a triple because there's absolutely nobody there. And the important thing to understand is you can't drop your third baseman or your shortstop into left field because they have to have their feet in the dirt.
In the dirt, right.
And what I don't understand is this, and I understand the outfield shift. You got nobody on. You got a left-handed hitter up. You got a ground ball pitcher.
And I stress circumstances, though.
Right. I stress nobody on, so I understand that. What I don't understand is this. Every major league team has hitting coaches. What are they teaching?
They're spending too much time on this junk.
You know,
teach the hitters to go the opposite way. On some circumstance that may happen to your team twice in a season, they're going to spend all their time like little boys saying, let's get the candy this way and not that way. Let's take a break. Stop it, please.
As Will Vaughn continues to scold everyone in America, let's take a break.
But I'll tell them.
Coming up, we will ask Jay Bilas whether UConn or Tennessee is the more vulnerable four seed tonight.
You don't want me to have to tell people where to go again. Does he give Gonzaga or UCLA the edge in that matchup? Aren't you? You're right, Tony. Go over hitting the ball to the opposite field and stop all this nonsense. Baseball full
of
nonsense.
Wait, you haven't said junk today.
Junk.
You need to call.
PTI fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite PTI episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and First Take ad-free as well. They also have your favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/PTI. That's Amazon.com/PTI to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In a story we broke in our first segment, the Sweet 16 tips off in about 45 minutes, so it's perfect time to bring in our great friend Jay Bilas. Let us start with the 6:30 game, which is Kansas State, Michigan State. How do the Spartans, who are always a miracle, you know, in the playoffs, no matter what their record is getting in, how do they match up against the Kansas State lead guard, Marquise Noel, who's been so fabulous?
Yeah, Tony, I don't know that anybody matches up well with Marquise Noel. He's averaging 22 points and 11 assists in two tournament games, and he's scored or assisted on 63% of Kansas State's buckets in this tournament. Wow. And the last guy to do that was John Morant at Murray State. That's how good Marquise Noel has been. He's only 5'8", but he's dynamic with the ball, and he can get his own shot. He gets into the lane, and he drives it to find people. And I think he's going to have to be made by Michigan State to complete plays and finish plays at the basket rather than spray it out. So you don't want to overhelp on him. You know, Michigan State's not the same kind of rebounding team that they've been. But what they really need to do is take care of the ball. And they've been doing a good job of that. They only went 2 of 16, I believe it was, from three against Marquette, Michigan State did. And they're going to have to shoot it better. And they are a much better shooting team than that. They shoot it about 40% from three. I think it's 39. But they're a much better shooting team than they showed against Marquette, yet still they won.
Jay, of course, there's so many great themes and matchups and storylines we could delve into. I'm going to ask you about the 2-4 seeds next. Who's more vulnerable of those four seeds tonight, in your opinion, UConn or Tennessee?
Oh, it's UConn. Even though I think UConn is playing as well as any team in the tournament, they're playing Arkansas. And Arkansas is long, they're athletic, they've got NBA players on their team, and they've been to the last two Elite Eights. Now, some of their guys haven't. They've got some freshmen in the lineup. But Arkansas is not a good perimeter shooting team. They're only shooting 23% from three in this tournament. But they're getting to the rim, and they're getting offensive rebounds, and they're getting fouled and getting to the free throw line. And that's what UConn really needs to do, is keep them off the free throw line. Make them take tough twos. You can recover late to their threes and keep them off the offensive glass. But Tennessee should have their way with Florida Atlantic. They're just better. They're stronger physically. They offensive rebound better, and they're much better defensively, especially guarding the three, where Florida Atlantic makes about 44% of their buckets come from three. And I think Tennessee is going to be able to take those away.
Okay, I'll readily admit that if I had to watch only one game, if I was limited to one game tonight, it would be Gonzaga-UCLA. And I'm one of those people who is completely obsessed with watching Drew Timmy. Setting it up that way, Jay, you give Gonzaga or UCLA the edge tonight in that compelling matchup?
You know, Michael, UCLA, in the analytics, they come out better as a combination of offense and defense. They're really balanced. Gonzaga is the better offensive team. They lead the nation in two-point field goal percentage, paint scoring, and they average well over 80 points per game. And I agree with you on Drew Timmy. He's like watching the college version of Kevin McHale with his footwork, the way he uses fakes and can get shots off. He's not the most spectacular athlete, but he's got an amazing feel and can really score. He's coming off a 28.8 rebound game against TCU. I think one of the real keys is going to be, can UCLA take Gonzaga out of transition? And then the job, can Anton Watson, who's the best defender for Gonzaga, he's about 6'8", 6'9", really athletic, and he's got great hands. I think he's going to wind up guarding, at least I would put him on Jaime Jaquez Jr., who's been a first-team All-American. And I think that matchup and then the point guard matchup between Tiger Campbell and then Nolan Hickman of Gonzaga, those are two of the things that are going to wind up determining the game. I think you can pencil in over 20 for Drew Timmy, because he's had five straight 20 or more games in the NCAA tournament. And if he gets 20 or more in this one against UCLA, that'll be his 10th, and that puts him in pretty rarefied air. But I favor Gonzaga just a little bit in the game because of their scoring ability, but UCLA can slow the game down and take him out of transition. And don't be surprised, it's a coin flip game.
We will get you out of here on this. We need a quick answer. We'll look ahead to tomorrow. There are two number one seeds left in the draw, Houston and Alabama. Which one do you think will have the easier time advancing?
I think it's Alabama. Alabama's playing San Diego State, who's no joke on defense. They're physical and they're men. They can really guard. They don't score as easily as Alabama, and Alabama's the most talented team. They got the best player in Brandon Miller, who's had some injury issues in the tournament, but they can go a lot of different ways. They're great defensively. They can score, and I think they have a much easier time than Houston, who's got an NBA-caliber shot-making team that they're playing in Miami.
Thank you, Jay,
we're
as prepped. Always. Thank
we're
you.
Adequately prepped and beyond. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
You can see more of Jay Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern on College Game Day. Let's take one last break, but still to come. Connor McDavid scores his 60th goal. Can he get to 70?
And was the return of Ja or Cat the bigger deal?
What's a more interesting question? Why Jay looks so studious today in his blue sweater, or why he has Bill Raftery's nameplate behind him on the set? Which interest?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Happy time, people. Happy 72nd birthday, Ron Jaworski. Most people watching the show think of our friend Jaws as a terrific football analyst. But let's go back to Jaws as an athlete. He was drafted in the second round in 1973 by the LA Rams out of Youngstown State, where he still holds the passing record for most yards per game. Jaws was traded to the Eagles in 1977. By 1981, Jaws had the Eagles in the Super Bowl. When he left the Eagles in 1986, he had the all-time Eagles records for passing yards, completions, and touchdowns. Made the Pro Bowl with the Eagles. And on a personal note, Jaws took me to the Anchor Bar in his hometown of Buffalo, where buffalo wings were allegedly invented.
How about that? That's pretty good. Did you ever beat Jaws in golf, or did he just own you? Was it an Aaron Rodgers situation?
Oh, he totally owned me. Okay. Oh, Jaws is 15 shots better than I am. You know, he owns golf courses. Come on. Happy anniversary, Knicks and Suns. On this day 30 years ago, these teams got into a series of confrontations that melted down into a brawl, resulting in an NBA record of total fines of $294,173 and somehow 97 cents. Most of the stories point out that Greg Anthony, who was on the Knicks bench in stylish street clothes, left his seat and punched Kevin Johnson in the head, prompting Johnson to later refer to Anthony as, quote, some scrub. Doc Rivers and Johnson got into it. John Starks and Danny Ainge got into it. Pat Riley got into the thick of it, tearing his pants. After the game, Paul Westphal said in admiration of his opposing coach, quote, he must have a clothing deal. He didn't care if he got him ripped or sweaty. Hats off to him, unquote.
I was at courtside for that game that night. The original beef, as I recall it, was between Doc Rivers and Kevin Johnson, if I'm correct. And right now, since I'm friends with these guys, I would invite Greg Anthony, Doc Rivers, and Kevin Johnson to all join me. I'll pay for the meal at Kevin Johnson's restaurant, Fixin's, right near ESPN in L.A. How about that? Think they'll take me up on it?
Way to beg for something free.
I'm paying.
What a name drop.
They're
not going to ask you to pay now. Happy trails to last night's game for the Arizona Coyotes. They lost as Connor McDavid got two goals, one off the Coyote goalie's head in the first period, and one on a breakaway in overtime for the game winner for Edmonton 4-3. These goals were numbers 59 and 60 for McDavid, who has 10 games left to become the first player to reach 70 goals since Timo Solani and Alexander Mogilny both got 76 goals 30 years ago in 1993. In this century, only Alex Ovechkin has gone over 60, 15 years ago when he got to 65. McDavid's on pace for 68, but he has five games left against Arizona, Anaheim, and San Jose, who are all weak teams.
Tony, McDavid has something all those other guys don't have. He can bring you out of your seat. He thrills you. All the guys you mentioned are great, great players, Hall of Famers. But McDavid, I'd rather watch him. I'm taking him over all the others.
Let's go quickly to finish. Ja Morant had 17, Karl-Anthony Towns had 22 in their returns. Which is the bigger deal?
Cat had missed 52 games, Tony, so I'm going to go with him returning to Minnesota, particularly with their best player out for three straight games. Giannis had 31 and 14 in fewer than 24 minutes, but it was only the Spurs. You impressed?
He's the MVP, Mike. I've said this all year. Notre Dame is finalizing a deal to hire Micah Shrewsbury away from Penn State. Is that a good fit?
Yeah, it is for me. We've lost Northwestern too many games to Penn State this year, two in a week. Armando Bacot returning to North Carolina for a fifth season. Surprising?
He can probably make more NIL money there than he can in the pros in Europe or someplace like that. Last one. Bruins go for their fifth in a row tonight. Do you like their chances?
Yeah, they're hosting the Canadiens, who are last in the Atlantic. Canadiens aren't any good this year. The Bruins, come on now. They beat up on just about everybody.
We're out of time. Try and do better the next time. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Mike Wilbon. Same time tomorrow, knuckleheads. And now, Tony, you got to watch Connor McDavid. Turn some hockey on. Here's SportsCenter.
I'll do that if you want. Can I just identify myself as the one who doesn't yell and scream at everybody?
No.
Just at you?
No.
I yell and scream at you.